Can we start the recording? It's good to go. All right. Thanks very much. Welcome, everyone, to our second session of the day. Welcome to Patrick Fahlstrom, Chair of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, and Julie Headland from ICANN staff. Without further ado, I'll hand over to Patrick for his update.
Thank you very much, Jonathan, and thank you very much for inviting us. This is a recurring meeting that we are trying to have at every ICANN meeting, so of course I recognize a lot of familiar faces here, not only in GNSO, but also I see some ESSAC members that have sneaked into the room. So one thing I would like to start by saying is that we have managed from ESSAC side to, over the years and during the meetings, get more and higher number of ESSAC members coming to the ICANN meetings. And I'm now looking at Judy, I think we are above 20 this time, or approximately, yeah. We're a little bit more than 20 out of 37 ESSAC members are here on site in Beijing. So if it is the case that you have anything of, for example, what I'm going to discuss now that you would like to discuss with any of them, please try to find them. Maybe we should have funny hats or something so you see who we are. Stickers. Yes, we should have stickers. Yes, Mikey. Yeah. So what we will go through here today is first a brief overview of where we are. I will, as normal, do this pretty quickly because I think it's more important to discuss two of the reports that we issued recently. It's even the case that SAC 58 is something that you probably have not even had any chance to read, but it's now available. ESSAC was initiated in 2001 and has been operating since 2002. We're an advisory committee of ICANN and as such provide guidance to the ICANN board and all the other SOs and ACs, to staff and to the general community. And our charter is to advise the ICANN community and board on matters relating to the security and integrity of the Internet's naming and address allocation systems. We are at the moment 38 members that each are appointed by the ICANN board for 3-year terms. We have three committees or working groups that are of long-term, long-term standing functions. We have the membership committee that is, which is basically like a nomcom for ESSAC that is handling all the requests that we get for membership. We have a group working on the DNSSEC workshop that is at every ICANN meeting Wednesday between approximately 9 and midday. We have participated in the working group of DSSA, or is participating there. And there are also a couple of other work groups where we have participated. One thing I would like to point out is that, yes, you do see ESSAC members participate in other working groups, but from our perspective, it's really important that the community separate between the cases where individuals participate in working groups and those individuals are also ESSAC members, and when ESSAC is participating, that's a difference. And I know that you here in GNSO, you do understand the difference between those kind of very important details. What is ESSAC statements is something that we make very few of them, but we ensure that they are as clear and as firm as possible. And while at the same time allow individuals that are members of ESSAC with their skill set participate in as many discussions as possible. We have a couple of work parties. And the task for a work party is to work on a specific problem statement or on a specific problem and try to see whether there is an issue. And the outcome of a work party can be either to respond on a question from the board or from an SO or AC or something like that. It could the outcome of a work party is often either a plain response, a letter. It could also be a report, and we will go through two of them today. Or the outcome can be that the work party come to the conclusion that what they were looking at is overtaken by events, or we thought there was an issue here, but by digging into it, we see that, no, there is actually nothing here. So that we do have a work party doesn't imply that there will be a report coming out, but these are the issues that we are looking at the moment. We're looking at, for example, abuse metrics. We have heard during the years quite a lot of people saying there is a lot of abuse happening using domain names, Whois, and all different kind of things. People say abuse, abuse, abuse. We have been working together with law enforcement to have meetings with law enforcement, and what we are trying to do is to come up with a better taxonomy, so two people that want to talk about abuse have easier to have a discussion on whether there is abuse or not by clarifying a little bit what we actually are talking about. We are looking at the root keylover for the DNSSEC root. That is something that you've seen that ICANN has public comment period is currently open regarding a proposal on how to do that, but we're also looking at the problem. As I said, we have meetings with law enforcement. We have for the last couple of years and also for 2013 applied for or sent in requests and participate in the Internet Governance Forum. Internet Governance Forum in the fall, at the end of the year, in Bali this year. The proposed workshop that we are going to work on this year has to do with general hygiene at scale, which has to do with a discussion on what happens when too many, for example, open recursive resolvers exist on the internet. That just one is closed and their open recursive resolver doesn't really help. What do we do about it? We are looking at success metrics for the new GTLD program. We are looking at abuse of the DNS for denial of service attacks. And we might start things that look at the complexity and challenges in DNS given the various additions that people and the various new usage that people see with DNS. The last publication we've done is SAC 58 and 57 that we have a look at shortly. We also issued a few other reports that in the end of 2012, during 2012, that you can see here on the slide, related to on content blocking, dotless domains, single character internationalized domain names. We've also given some comments, as you see, on the Whois review team final report and a report on domain name registration data model. Some of these things we already discussed at previous meetings. So if there is no questions, I would like to open for quick questions. Otherwise, we dive into the first of two reports that we'd like to go through today.
Joy.
Yes, thanks, Patrick. Just a quick question about SAC 56, the discussion paper on content blocking, which I thought was excellent, by the way. I'm just wondering if there's any ongoing work or that's arising out of that that you might want to share, or any opportunities for sort of other policy sort of input that might be a follow-up to that.
We in SAC are not working on follow-up on that content blocking, but I do know that other organizations have picked up what we were doing and they are doing continuation. I know, for example, because I happen to personally participate in that work, I know that the Council of Europe, for example, is looking at an investigation regarding content blocking, cross-border implications of various blocking technologies. So as I think more you see other organizations have started to look at our document and more in a more constructive way, I would say, look at the situation that, yes, if we recognize that we have distinct jurisdictions with each one having their own ability to come up with, for example, legislation and what is lawful and non-lawful, what kind of implications do that have, and how does that play together with the fact that internet and communication is global? So I think the discussions is finally, and yes, I see Milton looking at me as well, finally I see a little bit more constructive discussions here. People still disagree as much as earlier, but a little bit more constructive discussions. So with that, let me go into the report. So SAC 57 is an advisor on internal name certificates. This is something that we have been working on since fall of 2012, and it's the first time we do report this way, and which means that the methodology we used is different. The reason why we did it differently, and I will show at the end of this what the timeline, what kind of events happened. It all started when we had an internal discussion inside ESSAC, and one ESSAC member brought up this finding, and you could literally hear that everyone in ESSAC took a deep breath and were so scared, so like it was so close to feeling that the sky is falling for new DTLDs. So at the end of the day, we decided, and I really mean that day, we decided that this is work is something that we need to handle under a non-disclosure policy that is very similar to the various certs are using in the world. And we had a need for the first time to communicate with the affected parties with our recommendations long before we could issue our report. This in turn forced us to understand how we are going to do this communication, as we in ESSAC is not operational. So we decided to work with the security team of ICANN. And the good thing, of course, is that both ESSAC individuals, many of the ESSAC individuals, if not all, and the ICANN security team do have experience of working in these kind of environments with FIRST and CERT and law enforcement. So what we did was that we were working with the security team of ICANN. ICANN security team had to come up with a disclosure policy, and this is one of the reasons why that was published a month ago or something, or two. The disclosure policy was then applied, and luckily enough, as you will see at the end of this story, people reacted the way according to our recommendation. So with that, let's go into the report. So what we discovered was that there is four SSL or HTTPS connections or web connections that have the padlock being closed, and similar for other protocols. What you do when you want a key or a certificate is that you go to a certificate authority and you tell the certificate authority that you would like to have a certificate for your domain name. And there's nothing weird with that. There are more than 1,000. There are thousands of such certificate authorities in the world. What we were looking at was the practice of certificate authorities to also give out certificates for domain names that did not exist in the domain name system. And this is something that enterprises use internally. You use it like just because you need a certificate, you don't really need to tie it to the domain name system. One thing that we checked was that you will see is how many of these were given out, and we also discovered that quite a large number of these that already were giving out were certificates for things that today are not domain names but will be domain names when the new GTLDs are allocated. So the real finding is that it was possible to request from a CA today a certificate for a domain name that will be available after the GTLDs are allocated. And this is also the reason why we wanted to have like a disclosure policy here, because we found if we told this to the world, a lot of people would, of course, immediately request for certificates for domain names. Go through the list of applications and request sort of certificates for those. And we felt, wait a second, we need to talk to the CAs and the browser vendors first. So the report says that we went through the some of these investigations that exist, and we found that at least 157 CAs in the world, this is a lower bound, we have evidence that 157 CAs in the world give out internal name certificates without checking the new GTLD, the applied for list of domain names. The exact number of internal name certificates cannot be known because the CAs don't disclose what certificates they are giving out, of course. Enterprises, they, as I said, use these internal name certificates for many different kind of reasons. And as I said, You can apply for a certificate, get it now, wait for the TLD to be allocated, set up your own web server on a wireless network or something, hijack the connection, present the certificate, and the people that are spoofed that get attacked by the middle man in the middle attack, get a padlock that is closed, done. Not very fun. What we found during this investigation is that the CA Browser Forum, which is an organization where the certificate authorities and browser vendors are, they already knew about this. They knew about the ICANN UGTLD process. But they had decided to stop this practice by October 2016. And the vulnerability window, from ESSAC perspective, is that the window for vulnerabilities would be at least 3 years. Of course, if not, the GTLD process get like delayed, but we don't believe that. So we felt this was not good. So we asked the ICANN security team to immediately develop a plan, execute a risk mitigation plan. And now with a small print, that was the report. So what happened? So we alerted the CA Browser Forum, ICANN, ESSAC, together with the ICANN security team, on 23rd of January 2013. We explicitly briefed the CA Browser Forum at their annual meeting on 5th of February. They immediately created a ballot 96, on new GTLDs that was brought forward and was passed by the CA Browser Forum on February 20. So this was pretty quick action. And the implication is that the CAs will stop issuing certificates that end in an applied for GTLD string within 30 days of ICANN signing the contract with the registry operator. And CAs will revoke any existing certificates within 120 days of ICANN signing the contract with the registry operator. So this is what the CA Browser Forum, the decisions that they made. At this point in time, we decided that we, according to the disclosure policy, that everything is now under control and we could release the report, which we did early March. That's it. Any questions?
So I had Mason and then Jeff
Joy. Thank you, Patrick. I pardon my ignorance on this, but could you explain how the situation is different for new GTLDs? Why is it different for new GTLDs versus the TLDs that in recent history have been put into the root, like XXX or even going back to Biz and Info?
The answer is that there is no difference, but we did not think about it at that time. So yes, it might have happened already for the other new TLDs. You're absolutely correct. If that was your question, the answer is yes, it could have happened, yes. And by the way, let me say that this is one of the reasons why IETF is working so hard on the technology called DANE, which is putting the certificates in the DNS, and if the certificates are there and signed by DNSSEC, that can be used instead of CA and the CA hierarchy to get the same kind of security. So tie the certificates explicitly to the domain name with the help of DNSSEC. So that's why this is why you, the last 6 months, have seen an increased activity in the IETF in this area. So the engineering side do believe that the way of handling PKIs with X509 is just the first of many steps, I think personally, to that time is over when we could use that. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick. Clearly an interesting area for obvious reasons. I just want to remind speakers to introduce themselves before they speak, so it's recorded on the transcript. Steve.
Yes, Steve Metallitz with the Intellectual Property Constituency. Thank you for this presentation, Patrick. I'm trying to understand how, if at all, this issue fits in with the issue that was raised in the letter sent by PayPal, I think on March 15th. Which seems to be on a similar... Is this the same issue, or is this a similar issue? And if it's not the same issue, have you looked at that issue?
It's a similar issue. Let me put it this way. The PayPal letter is a little bit more generic, so it's sort of covering this as well. The PayPal letter talks about the sort of also the generic issues with namespace collisions. So one of the things that we have had with the DNS is that we have had a hierarchical namespace with known top-level domains. And that means that if you have other strings separated by dots that looks like domain names, it has been possible so far to know whether it is a domain name or this something that belongs to this other namespace. But what is happening at the moment, and I think, I haven't talked to Bill from PayPal since he sent the letter, so I don't really know really what's underlying that. But from now on, everything that is a set of strings separated by dots can be a domain name, which means that we will probably see more namespace collisions. And yes, in ESSEC, we are looking at whether there are more things hiding than this that we are. And so to answer your question, I think what he writes in PELPA is a general caution that there might be other things in there. And yes, we are taking it very seriously.
Jeff.
Thanks. Thanks, Patrick, for the update. Let me just ask, I guess, kind of a pointed question. Since the ESSEC is responsible for advising the board, would the ESSEC at any time use this? Let me give a little more background. Other people are using this ESSEC report as yet another tool to argue that the new GTLD program should not go forward. You've seen some letters, filings, and you've also seen we've also seen rumors and discussions in the GAC and other places. So let me just ask the pointed question. Is the ESSEC going to use this report to advise the ICANN board not to move forward on the current timetable for the new GTLD process?
No.
Thanks. I think that's a message that needs to go out there.
Absolutely, and I'm doing everything I can. I was chasing GAC members this morning.
Great. We appreciate it. It is an issue. It's a big issue. It's one that seems like it's getting under control, and I think we need to stop those outside of the ICANN community, and even those inside the community that want to use it as a basis to delay, we need to make sure that they know the proper information. Yeah.
Given that the outcome of this report, or sorry, if you see the outcome, the report is one thing and the outcome is another one. Okay, so even though the report itself, of course, talked quite a lot about this is how bad it is. But that was, note that, before we started to talk to the CA Browser Forum.
Right.
And if you look at the ESSEC document itself, it consists of two parts. One, which is the report that we actually finished basically 1st of January. And then you have an Appendix A, what happened between January 1st when the report was done and when it was released. Okay. And there you can see that, for example, the CA Browser Forum took action.
Yeah.
Okay. Based on our report plus the actions, we don't see any issue. We think this is a result, first of all. On the other hand, we do point out that with implicitly, just like I acknowledge that the letter from PayPal and the finding that we just saw that could have happened with other TLDs as well, that there might be unknown namespace conflicts out there. But on the other hand, that is a risk that all of us know, that each applicant that apply for a certain string, there is some risk with that, of course, depending on what string you choose. So there's also, even though it might be the case, I'm not saying that I know of any, because I don't, but if there is a risk with a specific string, in that case, like, is it really ICANN, or how much is actually the applicant that take the risk of, because it's also business risk and whatever. Yeah.
Thanks, Patrick. Joy.
Joy Liddycote, non-commercial stakeholder group. Patrick, it's a fascinating presentation, and thank you for it. Just a point of clarification on the action taken by the CA Browser Forum. Just two quick questions. One is the forum a forum of all certificate authorities, or is it more of an association of those who are like-minded and joined together? Firstly, and so secondly, it seemed that the action taken by the CA Forum was some kind of, I use it sort of adjectively rather than as a noun, regulatory in some way. In other words, it issued this statement that basically would stop issuing certificates. So is this the So does it actually sort of have that function, I guess, is what I'm asking, or is this something that's sort of out of character that it's stepped up to help with?
It's more like an association, so it's not a binding thing. It's not the case that all CAs must be members there. On the other hand, the whole idea with certificate authorities is, for example, that certificate authorities, according to their agreement within CA Browser Forum, a certificate authority should validate in one way or another that if you request a certificate tied to a certain domain name, that you actually is the holder of that domain name. And normally they do that by sending an email to a well-known email address to an email address in that domain name. But any CA can make mistakes. Mm. They can intentionally or unintentionally give you the certificate anyways, which means that the CA Browser Forum have no way already today to actually sort of police that. And we have had some issues, as you know, there are some well-known cases where CAs have made mistakes, technical mistakes, if nothing else. It's the same thing here. To be a CA, you need to behave well. Mm-hmm. And that implies that you're following the rules. That's their control mechanism.
Fascinating stuff. Thanks, Patrick. You've got some more slides to cover? We're a little short on time, so I just want to check if there's anything else.
I think we should, just because we're so short in time, we should just send this report to you, and we can discuss this sort of in the corridors when you find people instead. Otherwise, we will not be able to make it in time. So I would like to thank you all, and we'll be here, all of us. As I said, more than 20 of us are here this week, so you can just stop us any time.
Well, thank you very much, Patrick and Julie. I mean, you've certainly woken a few of us up, especially with that last issue, which I know is on a lot of people's minds. So thank you very much for your presentation. You can stop the recording now.